Hello there, and welcome to the second episode of Scale Your B2B Firm with Content Marketing. Today, we're going to talk about a really important thing in content marketing, which sets the foundation for things to come, and that is content strategy. There's going to be a lot of talk here around many of the fundamental assets that you have to prepare prior to creating content, or even trying to analyze all of the data that's coming through your website or any of the places where you're planning to share your content online. Now, content strategy is not just about marketing, it's about user experience as well. So it's a very broad topic that includes quite a few things, and I have an official definition for this. So content strategy guides the creation, delivery, and governance of useful, usable content. Okay, so it's not just about creating content for marketing purposes. It's also about delivering a good user experience to somebody who may be interested in consuming a piece of content, not necessarily for business reasons. So that's what content strategy is. Obviously, in this podcast, we're going to focus on business because that's what I do, and it's generally what most people would be interested in with content. But it's important to understand that there's a bigger picture to content than just marketing. It's also about making sure that user interfaces are easy to use in a way that's friendly and that the content resonates with your target audience. With that out of the way, we can start talking a little bit about the assets necessary for a marketing-driven content strategy. This is the type of strategy that you want to use for business purposes, and it's also where a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of founders and a lot of early marketers kind of get stuck on. And it's reasonable. It's not that easy to create a strategy that is fully aware of the business model that you're working on and all the different aspects of making sure that the content you create is actually valuable for business development. So let's dive really deep into what makes a good content strategy and why you should prepare certain assets over other types of assets. The very first thing that you have to do to get a good content strategy going is making sure that you understand your ideal buyer. And this goes back to your business model. This goes back to what you've built. So you have either a product or service that you're trying to sell, or you're trying to market, you're trying to penetrate a market, or maybe you're trying to innovate in some ways. However, how do you do that if you have nobody that's interested in your product? The very first exercise that you have to do is more of a general marketing exercise, and not necessarily related to content itself, but it's so crucial even for content. You have to understand who your ideal buyer is, and you do that in two steps. The first one is to identify your total addressable market, which is the market that you can address with your services in a way that's relevant and that you can complete in full. So for example, if you were a small company with a small team doing some type of analytics software, you probably wouldn't be able to serve large companies because you're just starting out and you probably have quite a few bugs or problems in your product that still aren't ironed out for enterprise use. So you would target only small business owners. Why? Maybe those enterprises could use your product, but would they get the value necessary out of it? Probably not. And also, would you be able to serve them in the right way? Also, probably not, because when you're facing a company that has 500 employees compared to a startup that has 2 employees, what kind of impact can you have in their business growth or in their strategies in general? Probably they're going to have a lot of processes in place already, so it's going to be really, really hard to impact them. Whereas if you were a bigger company, say a 50 people agency, then there is the possibility to impact even a bigger company. So it's really important that you start from your target market, not necessarily your target buyer. and understand really who your ideal, what type of market you're trying to target with your content, as well as your business model, obviously. So remember, content is connected to your business model. They live together. The two things coexist. They cannot live without another. And this is where many entrepreneurs get it wrong, because they try to separate content from their business model, but that's not the way it works. You have to understand your total addressable market first, put that onto a spreadsheet. So put all of the data, say for example, we're aiming for small companies that have a max of 1 million in annual revenue with less than say 10 employees, and which have a problem with their marketing messaging. They're not able to say a specific message, right? They're a small company, they don't have marketers. Maybe that they could be interested in hiring an agency. That would be your targeting on a broad level, on the market level. Then once you've figured out the market level, you want to figure out who the decision makers are within those companies. And that's really where you're going to go a little bit kind of like psychology based there, because there's going to be a lot of work of trying to get into your customer or your ideal buyer's shoes. And this is really tricky, right? Because as the product founder or as somebody that's building a business, you're in the weeds, you're doing the work, you're doing all the value creation. So how the heck do you even like get into that mindset? And the way you do that is by asking yourself questions. So you jot down some notes and you try and think, okay, well, if I was targeting this specific business or this specific product to this person, what would they be asking that, you know, would make them go like, okay, well, this is for me. I mean, the answer should be like, okay, this is great. This is going to help me a lot. So what would they be asking? And essentially, you have to answer one question specifically, which is the so what question. That this is what most people will tell you when you're first starting out with your startup. You're telling about your features, you're telling about everything that you've built and so on and so forth. But people will ask you, well, so what? Why are you telling me all of this stuff where I don't see the benefit? And that's what where you have to focus. Now, understanding your ideal buyer is as much an exercise in positioning your product on the market as much as it is a psychology-based exercise, right? You're trying to get your product in front of this audience in a way that's relevant to them and in a way that resonates. And to do that, you really have to start thinking just like your customers do. And over time, you'll get used to it. Now, I know that some of you may have already built a buyer, what's called a buyer persona, a visual representation of your ideal buyer. But the reason why I'm starting here is that for a content strategy specifically, you really have to start from your ideal buyer and really nail that part of your content strategy. Because if you don't start there, everything else breaks. Like everything else, you cannot create anything else. If you're not able to understand who you're writing for, why you're creating that content, and how it connects to your business model, I mean, there's no point in creating content at that point, business-wise. So you really have to start from what's called an ideal customer profile, which includes your total addressable market as well as your buyer persona. And this is the very first thing that you do. You research your market and you research your ideal buyer, and obviously compared to your offering. So you have a basic offering, or maybe you don't even have an offering yet, but you would like to know the types of buyers that you want to target to build an offering on top of. And that's perfectly fine, because you can build an audience prior to building your product. So you can have that type of content strategy going. However, it's crucial, and I'm going to repeat myself on this like so many times during this podcast, that you start from your ideal buyer. And what's even more important, and something that a lot of people may not understand, is that a buyer persona, the visual representation of your ideal buyer, is not fixed. It's going to keep growing over time, because as you understand more about your business, about your product, about your customers, you're going to update this buyer persona. And what happens in there is really important, because it's going to help you sell faster. It's going to help you market with more relevance, and it's going to help you grow your company effectively just with this one asset, the ideal buyer, the ideal customer profile. So I would highly, highly recommend starting there. There are some resources on koalarank.com to learn more about your ideal customer profile. You can go into the strategy section on the website, and there you can learn more about how that works. Then once you have an idea of your total addressable market and who your ideal buyer could be, you want to do something that's called positioning. And we talked a little bit about this before, but there's a whole process of positioning your product or service against your ideal buyer, right? So the first step is to get your ideal buyer in place together with the target to the total addressable market. And then the second step is to position yourself against their needs or against their wants, depending on the type of market that you're working in. Say, for example, when you think about an iPhone, you want an iPhone, right? You don't necessarily need an iPhone. You probably have an older version, or you have some sort of, I don't know, any other cell phone that works for you. But you still want an iPhone, right? It's cool. It has all the new features and things like that. So they position themselves as kind of like the ultimate gadget, or the ultimate kind of like thing that you cannot miss on every year. So that's why they're able to sell so many of them, because they're positioning themselves as a thing that you cannot do without, even though you absolutely can. And so that's really the power of positioning, is that it allows you to be extremely relevant to your target audience. And that's the power of marketing. So really what I say, and what a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of founders and a lot of marketers that are just starting out don't understand, is that marketing is all about positioning, finding that middle place between your product and your target audience. And that middle place, you want it to match with your business model, obviously. So say, for example, you have a SaaS model, a software as a service model, where you're going to offer a piece of software that does something of value to your target audience for a flat monthly fee. If your target audience doesn't see enough value in your software, then they won't be willing to spend that money every month. And especially, they will just shrug it off. They just go like, okay, well, so what, right? So that's why it's so crucial that you go through this positioning exercise, so that you can answer that question effectively. Okay, well, so that's the second step. But how do you go about it? How do you go about positioning yourself in a way that's powerful, that's relevant to your target buyer? Well, you do that by creating what's called a positioning statement. And a positioning statement really is the most powerful asset in your marketing strategy. It's literally a statement. It's a phrase. It's a statement where you'll see all the parts of your marketing strategy laid out extremely well. And it's for internal purposes. It's not to be shown to your customers. It's not to be shown to your friends. I mean, you can show it to your friends, obviously, for feedback. But it's for internal purposes, meaning that it helps you guide all of your marketing efforts without confusing you on what you're trying to accomplish. And how does that work? How do you get to a point where you're never confused about what you're offering and that your customers see the same as well? There's a bunch of stuff that you have to do here. And this is where it gets really, really deep, because when you're first starting out with your buyer persona, you can spend some time thinking about their psychology and get things done in about a few days, kind of like get the ball rolling. However, with positioning, you really have to make sure you kind of transfer yourself into this person's shoes. You're already trying to do that with your ideal customer profile, but you're doing it even more with the positioning statement, because at this point, you're like, okay, I have this product or service, and I need this to be communicated in a way that's relevant to my target audience. So you can see, you can look at this as a 50-50 split, right? Your target audience, your product or service. What lies in the middle? And that's positioning. Okay, but what does that mean? So essentially what you do is you list all of your features, and I'm sure you know about the features that your product has because that's really what founders focus on the most. So you have to do a brainstorming session where you list all of the features, and I mean literally every single feature that you've built out on your software. Say for example, on your software or anything else, even services have features, obviously. For example, if you have a software suite, you'll write down building an account, you'll write down profile icon, you'll write down, create a new user account, or you'll write down create a new dashboard, or things like that. Kind of like all of the things that your software does for customers and all the activities that they can do. And once you have this big list of features, you can say, for example, 50 features or something like that, then you go more in depth with it, and you connect these features in capabilities. Now, features are singular, individual parts of your product or service that do a specific thing, whereas capabilities are multiple features that come together for a specific outcome. So you can think of it like a car. If you think about the fog lights on your car, there are multiple things that have to happen there in order for the fog lights to work. But the features for that fog light are multiple. For example, you have the glass, you have the little light, you have the little switch right behind your steering wheel. You can maybe tweak the switch a little bit. So essentially, there are quite a few things that come together just to turn on that light, just to have the fog lights on. And that's the same thing with anything, literally in business, with your software, with a service for IT companies, with marketing, kind of like scenarios, anything that you can offer to a target audience has to have some capability. And those capabilities are really kind of the glue that holds together your positioning, because if you think about it, features are not what customers want. Features are just the individual parts of your software, of your product or your service or anything that you're building that, you know, isn't necessarily relevant to what your customers want to do. What your customers want is an outcome. And they can start getting that outcome with the capability. So what I recommend that you do is list out all of these features. And then once you have this big list of features, you can do it in a table, you can do it on paper, you can do it anywhere on a to-do task list or anything like that. Then you start bringing them together into capabilities, right? You already have this product or service, or you're thinking about building it. Now bring it together into these capabilities. And say, for example, 50 features will give you five or six capabilities, something like that, where these capabilities will give you a more clear idea of where you're going with your software or what your software currently offers that may be of value to your target audience. Once you've identified all of these capabilities, and you can name them anything really, you know, driving forward, you can name them like providing immediate understanding of your analytics, of your data. You can name them pretty much anything you want, as long as you think they're relevant to your target audience. And at that point, you have the fundamentals to understand the benefits that you're providing to your ideal customer. And that's really the power of positioning, because once you go through this process of listing all the features and bringing them into capabilities, you sort of are already attaching the two things, right? You're going through the process of understanding your software yourself, but on the other end, you have the customers that may use these capabilities for some reasons. And that's actually something that is interesting to them. So once you have those capabilities in place, you can start creating benefits out of them, right? It's a whole filtering process where you go from features to capabilities to benefits. And say, for example, if you have 50 features, you'll have 5 capabilities and then you'll have 3 benefits or something like that. You can have more capabilities as well. It really depends on what you're building. So I really recommend that you spend some time on this exercise for your positioning. So to do a recap, we start with the ideal customer profile together with the buyer personas within it. And then you create a second asset that's called a positioning statement. And the positioning statement starts with the exercise of listing your features, your capabilities, and your benefits. And this is a funnel, right? It's a way to kind of like visualize everything into one table. And then once you have those benefits in mind, which could be saving time on a specific process, or making more revenue thanks to lead generation, or any other type of kind of like benefit to your ideal customer, then you can list it. And once you have those benefits in place, this is where you're going to have the most fun, because those benefits are real value. Those benefits are something that your customers are going to be super excited about. And that's what you really want to focus on. Once you have those benefits, thanks to this exercise of brainstorming, you really want to focus on listing those into a separate page, of getting those onto a separate page, and describe them. Describe those benefits. Describe what they do for your customer. Think about your ideal customer and say, okay, what do these benefits, what can they get out of the capabilities that my product is offering? And those are the benefits that you're going to have. So once you have those in another page of your asset or anywhere really on your notebook or anywhere where you like to take notes, then you can start creating your positioning message, your positioning statement. So with the positioning statement, essentially what you do is you're bringing everything together. You don't just have the buyer persona on itself. You don't just have the positioning on its own or the benefits on their own. You have what's called a positioning statement because it brings everything together in a nice way. And to do that, you need to gather some information on your competition as well. Because if you think about business, there are multiple things that need to be considered. It's not just your target buyer. It's not just the benefits that you're offering them, but it's also who's trying to capture that same market need, okay? So your last step in the positioning exercise after all of this brainstorming is to look into your competition, to do a little bit of a SWOT analysis, so strengths, weaknesses, opportunity, and threats. And then from that analysis, put the data into your positioning statement. I don't recommend doing a huge SWOT analysis initially because it'll burn out a lot of your time and it's not necessary for startups. Not as much. It's more necessary for bigger companies that have established competitors and that know that those competitors will steal their customers. For a startup, it's better if you just list some of the people that you think could be competitors and give it a short description and kind of understand if they can make it into the positioning statement. So once you have a list of those competitors, you bring everything together and you say, okay, now I want to create this positioning statement because I want to have clarity on my marketing. I want to have clarity on how to produce content that will actually affect my bottom line, that will actually help me grow my business. And so what a positioning statement is a way, kind of like a framework, to get everything into one nice phrase. And so what you do is you separate various pieces of the statement, starting from the ideal buyer and your total addressable market. So you'll say, for founders of small B2B firms, and then you say what type of need they have or what type of want they have. For founders of small B2B firms who need to reach their target audience and scale their marketing efforts. So you see, this is more of a need, right? They're looking to scale their marketing efforts. And then that's where you come in, right? That's when you're going to have your benefit come through. Koala Rank is a content marketing agency offering fully managed services that help them generate hundreds of leads automatically, right? Sounds great. I mean, that's what I need. I need more leads because right now I have a pretty good sales process as a small firm, but I'm not getting enough leads. How do I get more leads? And entrepreneurs get really, really stressed out on this stuff. So again, this is our example internally. So running a content marketing agency, this could be one of your positioning statements, but for a software company, it could be for small business owners who don't have the budget to create or to implement their own infrastructure. Company name is a budget solution for bringing up your website and making it onto the web and generate more business that way. Anyway, this is just an example, but you get the idea. You want to get all of your kind of like benefits and target buyer and who you are in the middle. And as you'll see, your company is right in the middle. It's right in the middle between the benefits and between your target buyer. So you want to be kind of like stretching your mind a little and trying to understand what this process looks like. And at that point, make sure that you're closing up the positioning statement with your competitors. So once you know the benefits against your ideal buyer, then you write, compared to competitor one, we do this, period, in a way that they don't do. That this is our unique value proposition. And that gives you so much value. It's insane. You'll see literally your whole business in one statement because you have everything, the problem, the need for your specific target buyer, the benefits of your company. So you have your company in there as well. And then the competitors. So the people who are trying to steal business from you. So everything is nicely wrapped up in this nice little statement. And this helps you understand your business a lot better, explain yourself a lot better the next time you're going to do a sales call, and make sure that you're converting customers. Now, this is the very first step of your content strategy. This is helpful for any business. It's not just content. It should be done for every business pretty much. But it has to be done. And so for content itself, what I see is that a lot of businesses do not have these assets. And that's really kind of like what worries me many times is that how are they running their business, or how can they understand parts of their content strategy or parts of their internal processes if they don't have a good understanding of their positioning against their ideal buyer. So really, your content strategy should start from these two assets, the ideal customer profile and the positioning statement. So we're going to stop here for today. This is already a lot of information to absorb. But next week, we're going to talk more about content strategy and other parts that need to be tackled. These first two parts are the very, very beginnings. The very beginnings of your company, the very beginnings of your startup, and the very beginnings of your content strategy as well. It's important that you keep everything structured over time. As you build out these assets, they have to be there. They have to be a reference. And you shouldn't lose track of them because they make up a big, big chunk of what your content will be over time. And by content, we mean blog posts, we mean podcasts, we mean video marketing, we mean all kinds of types of content that you can produce online. So it's super important that you keep in mind that you're always trying to target an ideal buyer, that you're always trying to talk to an ideal customer, and that you have to position yourself towards them in a way that's relevant. Okay, so these are the first two steps of your content strategy. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit more about messaging and tone of voice. So these are going to be more about how should we convey the messages based on our positioning. Because positioning, as we said, is internal, whereas messaging is external, is what your customers are actually going to see on your website, on your brochures, or any type of marketing asset that you want to produce. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. It's a very simple podcast, and I hope that you're going to get a lot of value out of it. If you have any questions or if you'd like to reach out, please go to koalarank.com. You can see a lot of information on there. See you soon.